From TexasObserver.org, you're listening to the Texas Observer Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan McNamara, and I have with me three very interesting individuals who have spent the last 10 minutes talking about a budget surplus. In front of me here is Dave Mann, our editor. Hey, Dave.
Hi.
We also have staff writers Forrest Wilder and Patrick Michaels here with us today. In our very first podcast talking about... Yeah, I don't care if you guys want to say hi. In our very first podcast talking about the legislature... maybe we should just jump off right off with the topic we were talking about, gentlemen. What do you know about the surplus? More importantly, what should I know about the surplus? Hit me.
Well, I think you should know that the surplus right now is probably the big issue in Texas politics. So the comptroller came out at the beginning of the session and gave her estimate for how much revenue the state has. Basically, that lays out, as we were saying, how much money the state has to spend. And... we have, $101 billion total to spend, and within that there is $8.8 billion left in the state's accounts, left over from the last budget. And that's what I think most people are referring to as a surplus, an almost $9 billion surplus. And since we have so many needs in Texas, and we did so much budget cutting last session, some people think... emphasis on some people, that we should reinvest some of that money in programs that were cut. And Rick Perry's talked about doing tax cuts. There's other ideas out there, but I think the number one story in the legislature so far is we have a surplus. The state's in pretty good financial health. So maybe it's time to invest in some.
But Perry's talking about more tax cuts. Tax relief, excuse me.
To the tune of $1.8 billion, is that right?
Yeah, and he talked about, when yesterday's State of the State speech, he talked about spending some money, really for the first time, on infrastructure for water.
That's okay, you can say water, it's in your genes.
Whatever you'd prefer.
And transportation infrastructure. And that's about it. And he recommended, a $3 billion withdrawal from the rainy day fund one time for the fund the state water plan and for transportation infrastructure.
Well, generally it's just said infrastructure. So, I mean, you know, to me it's like both the state water plan, which is this massive document that contains over 520 different projects from huge new reservoirs to... fixing leaky pipes. I'm sorry, I'm talking about the water plan. That's making you choke on your coffee. But I mean, I think this is interesting because in some respects, people are saying, well, okay, Perry's come around, finally realized, it's okay for the state to invest in things that help, for example, facilitate a healthy business climate. But what I'm gonna try to watch closely, and I think others will as well, is how exactly is the framework going to be built for spending this money? Because in this state, especially with Perry, he's very good at building slush funds that we find out later maybe weren't run in a way that benefits the general public, but benefits special interests and campaign contributors.
Well, there's never any graft in road building or
construction. No, it's totally clean.
We're looking at the CPRIT. Fund right now, which is where cancer is a huge problem. We need to throw a lot of money
into prevention research institute of Texas.
This is a giant scandal about how these loans were handed out. It's unfolding right now. Just as we're talking about funding other giant initiatives like infrastructure and water planning.
That's right.
The irony of that is that when they passed it, I believe in 2007. That was like the great good government project of all. Everybody was behind that one.
And you know who came in and helped lobby for it in the Senate floor?
Lance.
Lance was a big star for that.
Well, I'll see, it's
been a bad year for both.
Doomed from the start. Yeah.
Karma. Yeah.
but as far as the rhetoric around the tax cut is this well-worn thing. This is your money, Texas taxpayers' money, and the appropriate thing, the proper thing for government to do is to return it to the taxpayer in a time when there's a surplus, which is sort of just a twist on what was said last session, which is the state doesn't have enough money, so we're not going to raise taxes. We're not going to generate more revenue. So, you know, we see now that government in Texas right now means lean times, cut, no more taxes, and then times when there's a surplus, that also means tax cut.
And the taxpayer who gets that money returned to them, to be clear, I mean, is that me? Am I the taxpayer who's getting that money, or is it the...
Well, you'd like to hope so, wouldn't you?
Is it, you know, giant business that has their... Franchise tax.
We call it small business owner. Yeah.
Or property owners if they want to do some kind of property tax deal. But the question is, what's the counter argument? I mean, that's pretty attractive to people when you say, okay, the government has a surplus, we're going to give you back your tax money because it's your money. That does register with people. So, like, what's the, why not?
Well, I mean, I guess the first thing to answer is, who is the you here, and how much are we talking about on an individual basis? If for the average person in Texas, it may be, you know, not very much at all. And that same person may benefit, for example, by having $5 billion restored to public schools. So, you know, the money can be used, yes, to give a tax cut that I'm sure some people would appreciate, or it could be used in more long-term investment in schools, roads, all the things that state government does in Texas on the cheap, and after last session, you know, even more on the cheap, and we know what the consequences, we've seen the consequences of some of that. But I don't know, I ask y'all, I mean, what are handicapping this thing, is there any likelihood that, for example, the cuts to public schools will be restored in part or in whole? And I'm looking at you, Patrick, because this is your beat.
Yeah, I mean, there's a variable there that I think is unique to the school funding, which is the school finance trial. But I think as soon as Monday, you know, we'll hear what the court in Austin has to say about it before it goes on for appeal. But a lot of folks at the Capitol don't want to say anything one way or another about school finance because of the trial. You could say they're just using it as sort of a shield so they don't have to deal with the questions right now. There may be some money put back in from last session, but it won't be a whole lot.
Because the court tells them to, or because?
Well, the idea is that, you know, we'll spend, you know, we'll set aside X number of dollars for schools, and then the Supreme Court's going to come back, you know, later this year and say, well, you need to do the funding totally differently than you have been. And then why would we set aside money right now in a certain way that, you know, isn't going to be, you know, that we can't even spend the way that we thought we were going to be able to? I'm not sure how much sense that makes, but it certainly is, you know, you're not going to see a whole lot of changes to the funding system, this session. There may be a little bit more money put in, but they're even using the trial as a way to avoid talking about that.
Now, Strauss came out and said, but he wanted a little bit more money.
Mm-hmm. He was talking about maybe $2 billion or so.
Is he the only one? Perry didn't say anything yesterday in his speech about that, right? I mean, that's kind of amazing. They cut $5 billion out, and then he's not going to put restore any of that?
Well, no. I mean, on the public ed front, I mean, Perry and others have shifted the conversation to vouchers or scholarships, I guess, as they're now trying to peddle it. So, I mean, this is right in line with the idea of, like, well, the problem is not that we don't spend enough on schools, it's that we spend a lot on schools and they don't use the money efficiently. Public schools are maybe even inherently inefficient because they're not subject to market discipline, so school choice, vouchers, charter schools.
And that's the conversation that Rick Perry and David Dewhurst and Dan Patrick want to be having now. They don't want to talk about just the budget line for schools.
I mean, so
those are two separate issues, aren't those two separate issues?
Well, I think in a sense, it's like it is changing the subject. It's the magician's diverting your attention over here because they just picked your pocket, mm-hmm. type of deal.
Well, and Perry will use the same argument as he does for Medicaid, which is, you know, why would we put more money into a failed system? Not that he would say schools are a failed system, but you know, why would we put more money into a system that's running less efficiently than it should? Why shouldn't we just focus on efficiency instead?
Well, my car doesn't get quite the gas mileage that, you know, they say it's supposed to, but I still put gas in it because, you know, I got to get around. So,
is it your car in the shop?
Kids. My car is in the shop, actually. It's having some mechanics.
And aren't you thinking about selling it?
Yeah, actually, I am.
Okay, so this is where the extended metaphor literally breaks down.
I thought that lined up quite nicely.
Aren't you glad you had choice in which car you bought in the first place?
Yeah, but see, this is the problem. I mean, the free market is great, and when I'm out car shopping in the next few weeks, I'm going to really appreciate my my free market choices. But that only extends so far. I mean, where is the evidence that free market principles can be applied to really difficult policy areas like healthcare or education? Maybe in small, isolated areas, but I don't see where you can apply. This has been tried, right? We've tried to apply these business principles to education, and it's like you know, a round peg in a square hole, or a square peg or whatever, round hole, whatever it is, it doesn't seem to fit, right? I mean, is there any evidence that these, like, the free market approach is working or has worked, and all we need is more of it? You know, that'll solve all our problems.
Well, there's evidence. There are a lot of people studying things very hard and coming up with a lot of papers about why, you know, defending these ideas. But it's not something we've seen in a large enough scale to say that it's going to create a lot of efficiency that's going to change the whole system. I mean, school choice programs, I don't think there's one that's big enough to have the kind of results that you know, they promise for the whole public school system. You know, even what Dan Patrick and David Dewhurst have suggested for this time would be a pretty small scholarship program that wouldn't affect very many students, and you still leave the rest of the school system at least, you know, as good as it is off, you know, maybe worse off because of it.
I mean, and the truth is, there are school districts out there that make bad financial decisions. I know. I went to one of them. But the irony there is that, and of course, there's many that make fantastic decisions. It's like anything else in government or the private sector. You know, there's good management, there's bad management. But the irony here is that the legislature has fetishized local control to such an extent that I don't really know how much room they have to complain about isolated examples of school districts, school boards, yes, who are elected officials making poor planning decisions, not using the dollars as wisely as they could possibly be used. I don't know if you can take those examples and extrapolate and say, let's break the thing, you know. And frankly, you know, as you've talked about, Patrick, it's going to be a hard sell, isn't it, for rural Republicans who have or in district represent school districts and their legislative district that are anchored in these public schools, and there is no alternative. There's not going to be a charter school. There's not going to be a private school of any sort. The public school, that district, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, you could say there's national momentum behind the school choice movement that wasn't around when we had these battles in Texas before, but I think that the votes probably still shake out pretty similarly, that you're going to, you know, you're going to have to win over a bunch of rural Republicans to the cause that weren't on board, you know, 6 years ago. 4 years ago, the last time we talked about it.
Are there education solutions out there that we haven't tried, that we probably should try? I mean, to me, it kind of seems like there are districts, there are schools, yeah, they got this local control, but often what I see is people just kind of shooting in the dark and hoping to hit something that works. I mean, here in Austin, they're going to try, what, you know, single-sex schools, and that's going to cost a whole bunch of money to refurbished schools for one gender. And I heard the quote I heard from one of the AISD people was, well, we're not sure, but we just got to try something. And that's kind of what it seems like. And we got, what, schools buying iPads now, you know, and Lord knows what the front end cost of that is. I mean, I hear that and I'm like, well, yeah, they're not spending money efficiently. And they're just kind of pow, 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 firing things off. Trying to find the next big thing in education that's going to work.
But they can't, they're tapped out on the dollars. Like, okay, they can't raise property taxes anymore. You're maxed out. The state's not giving any more. They're giving less. So what else can you do other than just throw a bunch of crap against the wall and hope for something to, you know? I mean,
you get a grant.
Live about it.
You get a grant to buy some iPads, and that's what you can get the grant money for, and that's what you're going to do, too. I mean, help yourself any way you can.
I mean, there is an instinctual thing to, we got to try something. We got to do something. You can't just sit there and accept the status quo. It's unacceptable to parents, unacceptable to students. So, I mean, what else do you, and perhaps these ideas, I mean, some of them I'm sure probably are good ideas, right? I mean,
are they?
I don't know. I mean, is there anything inherently wrong with having an iPad?
Yeah. Well, I personally, well, this is just my opinion, but I don't, what does a 13-year-old need with an iPad?
I mean, dude, there's all sorts of awesome games.
Yeah, exactly. Angry Birds is really good.
Exactly.
Words with Friends.
I love Angry Birds.
One of the things I heard about iPads is that certain schools are actually using money that would be used for, like, maintenance, upkeep, like, that kind of thing, and they're buying iPads instead. So, are you running into a situation where schools can't keep up the equipment that they have because they bought iPads? It seems like it's defeating themselves.
Yeah. There was that funny moment that Olivia, one of our reporters, went to a press conference by a coalition of foundations that's very school reform, school choice oriented, in which they were not really wanting to talk about the whole funding thing. They wanted to talk about blended learning, which is taking technology and using it in combination with face-to-face traditional classroom instruction for a new kind of mode of teaching. And the guy that was promoting this said, you know, for example, there's just free iPads available these days. And he was challenged by a reporter who's just like, really? Well, where? And the guy was like,
I'd like one. Where can
next
I get
question.
It? Right.
And this is, you know, that gets to the thing where it's like, to some extent, we've said, okay, we're not going to give schools any more money. And now people are just sort of like searching for answers and maybe the wrong places. I don't know. Are there free iPads out there?
Some, very few.
Okay.
I mean, but this, what you're talking about is you know, somebody who's trying to convince you that that's not the role of, you know, the state to offer this funding or to worry about whether or not you're getting, you know, the right instructional materials, that it should be up to the school district to fend for themselves and, you know, get creative, right? Like, figure out how to do more with less.
And in fact, I left out a key part of that story. He was talking about dissecting frogs
right.
on an iPad.
Which is just as good as having the dead frog in your
Doesn't
hand.
Doesn't that hurt
right?
the screen?
When you get your scalpel drawn
right.
cut into it? Yeah,
yeah, I heard, wasn't the argument that, like, buying a frog is $7, but buying the app to dissect a frog is $5?
There you go.
So my like first that. Reaction is, I'll get you frogs cheaper than that.
That's scary. Thanks for sharing that with us.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, I'm sure we'll have other interesting things to talk about in future editions of this podcast, because the ledge isn't going anywhere. Not until May, anyway. But you can follow our continuing coverage of the Texas legislature at texasobserver.org, which incidentally is also where you will find additional episodes of this podcast. Thanks for listening, and thank you, gentlemen, for being on the show.
Thank you.
Nice. Thank you.